It's Thursday, May 21st, 2015, and you're listening to episode 368 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 50 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
And hey guys, this is Derek.
All right, so we got Derek Knutson joining us on the show, and he's going to talk about some good stuff and also join us for our discussion topic.
Dan, is he going to make me feel guilty?
Yes, he will.
Yeah, he's very good at that.
But before he does that, I do want to give you guys a quick heads up that a couple weeks ago, Chad and I recorded some side content that was originally going to talk about some things going on in our lives, but then that all kind of became irrelevant. Story that's longer than it is interesting.
Yes,
but here's the point.
So.
There was some good discussion in there that we want to keep, but it's only maybe about 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So stick around at the end of this episode, because either right after we're done talking or after the outro music, I'm going to tack on some additional sort of extra content where Chad and I kick around a few topics. So just be listening for that. But let's go ahead and deal with the issues at hand. Derek, let's start. Do you want to start with Fear the Fruit or the Charity?
Let's start with Fear the Fruit, because that's going to be a little bit quicker than
All
the
right.
Charity.
So at Fear the Con 8 this year, we've got Fear the Fruit, which will be, unless anything's changed, will be...
So wait a minute. Who's Derek?
Okay.
Let's pretend I've never listened to the show before, and I've never been to a Fear the Con.
All right.
Why does Derek make me feel guilty?
I'm a homeless person that's off the street that you guys picked up.
Does Derek just so happen to be on any other podcasts? Who is this guy?
Has he ever made a game system?
I know. Possibly.
Perhaps
probably
a universal
not.
One for telling stories.
Who knows? I mean, it's no award-winning system, but...
No. But that's going to happen soon.
Not yet.
And then I can share the lofty pedestal that you are on, Chad.
Yes, it is. Up here on Mount Olympus is wonderful. The weather is nice. Not like those filthy peasants below us.
Okay, so Derek... Go ahead, give us a quick intro to who you are for anyone that's not been following our show.
Okay, so I've been a long-term booter. I've been to almost all the Fear of the Cons, including what I call Fear the Con Zero, which was a little bar con. I started my own podcast with my friends called The Established Facts, and I've written for Living Greyhawk, different scenarios for that, and I have recently put out Universal Storytelling System, which is meant to get new players into the hobby and provide a more story-oriented system for veteran players. But I've also been running Fear the Charity since 2011, and that is a yearly event that happens at Fear the Con that I choose a different charity or charities, and all the money that's collected at the event at the con goes to those charities. So in a nutshell, that's who I am.
Okay, and this year, Derek is also handling Fear the Fruit.
Correct.
And to explain what that is, that's a tradition that's been around since, I think, Fear the Con 2, maybe 3. Mm-hmm. It's been around for a while. But the idea is that we take up a collection, get some money together, and go out to a farmer's market, buy bulk amounts of healthy food, apples, oranges, bananas,
bacon,
and such, which are then available free of charge to anyone who's at the convention. And then since we typically get quite a bit, all of the fresh fruit that's left over is then taken and is typically donated either to a homeless shelter or a women's shelter or something like that.
Right.
It's given to some kind of a charity. It's not just like tossed in the dumpster.
Yeah.
And given to the raccoons, which have their own charity.
Exactly. But additionally, this year, I'm also doing a canned food drive. So if you want to bring like unopened toiletries and cans and boxed non-perishable foods, I will also be taking those to the shelter. Please make sure to check your expiration dates, because I know it's easy to just dump stuff from your pantry.
Yeah. No apple pie filling, please.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Right there. Okay. I got a tangent on this. So,
you really like apple pie filling, I know.
No, that's
all
not
the cans should be apple pie filling.
That's not the one I'm going to talk about specifically. But yeah, please do bring stuff for that, because in addition to the fruit, we'll be giving the toiletries, these other foods to these same charities. Obviously, people in need. This is something you can do to help them out. And so if you want to bring something like an open toothpaste, toothbrushes, toilet paper, paper towels.
It's amazing how much they need that stuff.
Yes, exactly. One of the things I was going to say don't do, and it's funny you said that because this is one, I know we try to keep the show apolitical, religious, but this just happens to be a story about a church. I was talking about a canned food drive at a church, and the one I always see there that I had to kind of say something about, it's always pumpkin pie filling.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're going to give pumpkin pie filling to people that are living on the street. What are they supposed to do with this? Right.
It's really high in fiber.
It is. Actually, of all the pie fillings, pumpkin pie filling is one of the better ones to eat raw.
That's the best, worst thing you can get.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We buy so much pumpkin pie filling, not for us, because our vet has prescribed it for our dog at one point.
Yes. Right. Of all the pie fillings. No, it's seriously pumpkin pie filling and strawberries is another one. They recommend giving strawberries to your dogs. It's actually really good for them digestively. But the point being here, remember that we are giving these to a charity. And so they're going to be lacking in a variety of things.
Pie making ingredients is not something they're lacking.
Don't bring a box of cake mix unless you're also going to bring the milk, eggs, and easy bake oven. In which case, go ahead.
Please don't, because milk and eggs are perishable.
Right. So you could find some prepper and get powdered milk and bottled water and powdered eggs and more bottled water. And
oh, you're just giving them bad ideas.
An easy bake oven with a diesel generator and 5 gallons of fuel. Mm-hmm. We can work this out.
There's no way that could go wrong. No way.
Especially indoors.
Right.
Carbon monoxide is for pussies.
That's right. Exactly.
I have that stuff daily.
So, Fear the Fruit. Derek, obviously, if they're bringing canned foods or toiletries or an easy bake oven and diesel generator, that they can give to you at the con. If somebody wants to donate money to either spend on the fruit or on things that you decide to buy to round out what we're donating, how can they get that money to you?
FearTheFruit.com.
So fearthefruit.com website there has all the info they need, email address. Yes. Okay. Yes. All right.
And it has a big donate button, all that.
Okay. Then I will put that in the show notes. That's where you can go find that. All right. So Derek, let's talk about, obviously that has a charitable aspect. What is the straight cash charity that we are doing this year for Fear the Con?
I'm ready to feel guilty.
Yeah. He has made us cry manly tears each year.
It is stuff like Flag for Orphan Puppies from Jesus.
I mean, it was like,
I can't top Home for the Hopeless. I mean, Home for
the one that got me was you had dogs that were in the military.
Yep.
Dog veterans that were in the military.
And I think that they disabled
in combat and that had been disabled, in some way in combat.
They were disabled.
And had PTSD, and they were given to soldiers who were also injured in combat and had beat PTSD so that they could be buddies together.
It is like that is a charity. It's like a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah, that's the guilt.
It's like we need to rehabilitate dogs that served this country and have gotten wounded so they can help veterans who have served this country and gotten wounded.
Right. I mean,
all right,
if you don't give something to this charity, you're just a bad person. That's all there is to it.
So, Derek,
I donated that year.
So what is it you got kicking this year? What's the charity this year?
I have two, actually.
Okay.
Oh, double guilt.
Oh, double guilt.
I'm not even Catholic. This is going to be awful.
You're going to be in a confessional.
I only gave 15% of my income, Father, to the war puppies. I'm so sorry.
Look, when Derek grows up, he's going to be a Jewish mom.
Okay, funny story about that.
I've been a Jewish mom.
Well, actually, I grew up in Scarsdale, New York, which is 80% Jewish. So I've learned from the best.
Okay, so excellent. So what are the charities this year?
One is Little Red Door Cancer Agency. So,
oh, God, this isn't even starting out good. I'm already getting my wallet out.
So this helps with people that have cancer. So it provides free nutritional supplements, medical supplies, wigs, turbans, breast prosthetics and bras, transportation to and from chemotherapy, radiation treatment, all the stuff that costs so much money. They provide those services for free for these people.
Why do I feel like an asshole just sitting here?
I know.
All right. What's the second one?
So a booter runs a library in Ferguson, Missouri.
And oh, yes.
Yeah.
So the second one is actually the Ferguson Public Library. For those that don't know, he kept the library open during the riots as a safe place for people to hide out and, you know, have a safe place. And so I figured that this would be a good charity for us to donate.
Yeah, Scott Bonner is, you know, people talk about firefighters as heroes and police officers as heroes and soldiers as heroes.
And they are.
And they are. He is a librarian. Who is a hero?
Yeah, let me tell you a little something about the Scott Bonner story here. He's actually a member of the gaming group I have with my family. And so we actually haven't gamed in a while because we've had a lot of craziness going on.
But riots in Ferguson.
Well, all right. So Scott, he's a librarian by trade.
Yeah.
And he was working at a library. I don't remember which one it was. But then he was offered the opportunity to take over as the head of the Ferguson Library. And so he agreed to do that. And then the Mike Brown thing happened.
2 weeks later.
Yeah. It was almost after he started. The Mike Brown thing happened. The riots broke out. Then you had the grand jury thing and then the riots after that. And during all of it, not only did Scott keep the library open, but because of the fact that the local school districts were not able to conduct classes during those periods, what he did was he was having the teachers come over to the library where kids could be brought in by their parents and basically get free education. Yeah. So the teachers would suggest books for them or do one-on-one tutoring or do small classes. And so he kept it open to remain a resource for moving that community and those people forward during a time when obviously a lot of things were not headed in a real positive direction. And so I don't care what you think about Mike Brown and Darren Wilson and Ferguson and politics and all. I don't care.
Yeah.
What he did was just awesome humanity. Yeah. I mean, it's just awesome stuff. And so, yes, they could certainly not only use, but I think Scott has proven in very short order that he will use those resources well.
Absolutely.
That he will walk the walk.
Did you hear about the healing kits he made?
No, I did not.
No,
so he made these kits, and they're for children, and they're healing kits. And this was when all the riots and stuff was going on. So you're talking about little kids, and they don't get it. They don't really understand. They just know bad things are happening and that their parents are scared, and so they're scared. So he put together these kits that contained a book for children about dealing with anxiety and tension and change and that sort of thing.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And a little stuffed animal. And a kid who was having problems, he handed them a healing kit. I think it had like a coloring book in it too, or something like that. I mean, it was awesome.
If you think any of this is embellished or whatever, go to Google and Google Scott Bonner or Google Ferguson Library, and you will see that we are probably underselling the work we're doing.
Yeah. He is not the kind of person to call attention to himself
at all.
So he cannot be comfortable right now as he's become a national figure.
Yeah, he's doing great work. So that's a great charity. And if you're at all looking at the events in places like Ferguson and now Baltimore and whatever, and it's, hey, what can I do to help the community? Once again, without getting involved in a political way, without siding with somebody or whatever, this is how you side with the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And just from my perspective, whenever I choose these charities, I do pretty deep background on them because there are so many charities out there that are just either mismanaged or take more and don't actually do the project they say that they're doing. So he fits the bill entirely. Yeah.
And we know him. We know him personally, and he is an all-around, upstanding, good guy.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely. He is, very much.
Now, just as a quick side note, one of the reasons why I chose the cancer charity is because my father has been battling prostate cancer. So he's been fortunately succeeding, but an ex manager of mine from my previous company unfortunately lost a battle with cancer last December. Doing a cancer charity was very important for me this year as well.
You know what we should do? Because we have all men and one woman on this cast, we should do a Movember event where we in November where we try and raise money for prostate cancer awareness. Mm-hmm. We all grow out mustaches or big beards for the entire month.
Look into doing that.
That would be awesome.
So, Derek, obviously people can send money. Once again, I guess on the Fear the Fruit site for that. If they've got money for the charity and they're coming to the convention, obviously they can bring it. If they're not coming to the convention but want to donate, do you have a way for them to do that?
Absolutely. Fearthecharity.org. There are donation links for both charities.
Okay, then I will be sure to link those in the show notes.
And I'd also like to quickly go over what's going on at Fear the Con, if that is okay.
Yes.
No, it is not.
Absolutely. In fact, I was going to ask you about that because I know last year I gave you a pretty good chunk of money just to do terrible things to, was it Beth?
Beth. Adam and I forget who else.
I'm doing something, it's called an augmented reality game. And what it is that throughout the convention, there's a storyline that starts at Wing Night and goes through slot six. And there are different events that people can participate in, and all the money goes to charity. So one of them is the dungeon crawl that's going on slots five and six. Now, there are six participants, Josh Demery, Don Martyr, Josh Martyr, Beth Roper, Lance Heiselman, and Adam Gottfried. And there are different things you can pay for to help them or harm them.
So think like Hunger Games, you know, they had sponsors or whatever, mm-hmm. and like a little thing would float down that had some healing agent or whatever. Imagine that kind of thing, except for a donation to the charity. Mm-hmm. You can buy that, oh, hey, I want them to find a healing potion or a cursed item. Or last year I gave one of them a girdle of masculinity, femininity, just to be completely juvenile.
Mm-hmm. I gave Beth last year, it was a complete in-joke for the game that we were playing at the time, a bag of holding full of elven bread.
I want to give somebody a bear trap.
You can. There's traps.
They like step on a bear trap and it's, mm-hmm. you know, on their foot. I don't know. That's amusing to me.
It'll probably be amusing, especially if like Adam or Josh step on it, because they'll react awesomely.
Yeah, they'll start cussing. It'll be great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, awesome. A couple of the things that are sort of time dependent. One of them is sellout. So a company or podcast can pay $200 and you can provide a logo for the company to me, and I'll make a bandana that the players have to wear the entire time.
And I'll throw in on behalf of Fear the Boot, if somebody picks that, so you're a game company or you're another podcast or whatever, then we will happily give you a shout out on the show as well. So in addition to the publicity at the convention, we will also give you publicity on the show if you are willing to donate that money to Derek's charities and to help obviously the people that will benefit from that money.
Right. Yes. The only thing I require special for that is written consent that I can use the images. But all the information for this is on fearthecharity.org. So the second thing that I have got going on, overall the storyline is basically the three main bad guys of Fear the Boot are joining forces to raise Unicron, Baron von Badass, Shel Silverstein, and the Dark Lord of Denny's.
Ooh. If you need a sequel, sexy. The guy always pulling the strings is Don Shadowrun.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. The Adventure of Shadowrun.
That's right. Don Shadowrun.
He's a shadowy guy in a chair that always turns around and you see nothing but black.
He's always just stroking a cat.
You know, we've never figured out, is his name Donald Shadowrun?
Yeah, it is Donald Shadowrun.
Or is it like Mr. Shadowrun?
No, he might think of himself as like a mafia Don, but no, he is Donald Shadowrun. It is Don Shadowrun. Oh.
With Shel Silverstein, I'm going to have three huge hangman puzzles. When you first get to the con, you'll be handed a token. And you turn that token in and you can guess a letter or guess the puzzle. You can also remove letters from the puzzle as well. And for each puzzle that's solved, because the main bad guy for the dungeon crawl is the Dark Lord of Denny's, his special weapon goes down in power. But if you want to keep it at full power, you can obviously screw the people trying to solve the puzzles. And then the third thing is your take your shot at Baron Von Badass. There are three different heroes, a normal hero, advanced hero, and a badass hero. So you pay the initial cost for the normal hero. It's $5, advanced is $10, and the badass is $15. And you can do a round with Baron Von Badass. Every round thereafter, you can pay an additional $5 as long as your character survives that round. And every round that you survive, you get a special ticket. And if you kill the Baron, you get 5 tickets. Those will go in for a drawing for the white box that Watsy put out, the special edition. And then the other thing is the raffle. And with that, it's $10 per ticket. The prizes are the 3 leather-bound 3.5 D&D books, a leather dice bag, ceramic dice, and a nice journal for the GMs out there. And that's it.
Okay, so once again, all this information will be in the show notes, so you can find it there. You can find links to the various sites and such. And if you need to get a hold of Derek, Derek, what is your current forum name? Is it just Derek or is it still?
DWolf52000.
Okay. I'll put that in the show notes as well. So if you want to contact him via the forums for some reason, you can hit him up there too.
Absolutely.
So let's get to a gaming topic here. And then once again, be sure to stick around after the show is over for another little bit of gaming goodness from Chad and I. But the topic we're going to talk about today, Waynard, this is yours. I agree with it, and I've had the same thing happen, but I'll go ahead and let you set this one up.
So I find frequently when I'm running games, I'll come in with an idea of what I want the NPC to be, and that goes immediately out the window the moment I grab a die. So I found as I go through, some of my favorite NPCs have been completely defined by how I rolled the dice, and I didn't plan on that.
Yeah, I've seen this occur in both the positive and negative way. And, you know, kind of backing up to a more foundational thought. I've said several times in the show, and I fully stand by the idea that if you take the number of players at the table, you actually need to add one because the dice are their own force. And, you know, we as humans, we work off of partially expectations, but also off of reality. So if I tell you this is a great movie and you go in all excited and then it turns out not to be such a great movie, you know, that kind of changes your view of things. The same thing can happen with NPCs. Where the GM may say, oh yeah, this guy, he's really the top of his game and he's awesome and everything he does is outstanding. But if every time you bring him out, you're an above the table rolling GM and you shoot the dice and all you're coming up with is failure, 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 failure. Pretty soon this NPC becomes a punchline of the game.
Yeah.
Yep. Chad, you had this happen sort of, not quite the same, that extreme, simply because the expectation wasn't there. But you had this happen with an NPC, Limnal.
Limnal, yeah. I loved Limnal. Did I roll him up? Or was it just more like...
You rolled real quick to see his intelligence when we tried to bluff him.
Yeah, that's right. Because you guys hadn't really interacted. He was a named character that I hadn't named NPC in the game. And but they hadn't really interacted with him and done anything. I hadn't really put him out there. He was just a guy I had in the back of my mind. I might have just even did a total ass pull with him. I needed somebody standing in front of a door that they needed to get through. So he was like a big guy. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to bluff him. And so I'm like, well, let's see what his intelligence is. Roll it. And I mean, he rolled, what, like a 4?
It was bad.
I mean, it was, to put in perspective, he was Hodor from Game of Thrones. Essentially, I mean, he didn't have one line, but he talked I'm not going to do the accent. Some people might find it offensive, but I mean, he really talked really slow, slurred. He was mentally deficient. I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah.
And I didn't really base him off Hodor because I hadn't seen Game of Thrones and I never read the books. This is before the TV show came out. But yeah, he was just this big, gigantic guy who his mom put him in the town guard to do something. And they could go up to Limnal and they could say, okay, Limnal, stand in front of this door and guard the door. And he's like, okay. And he would stand there. And if they forgot about him, he would stand there for 10 hours until he fell over.
Yeah. Did he have to go through a personality change? Like, because you said that they sort of encountered him before.
Well, they didn't really encounter him. Actually, now that I remember, because this was a while ago, so the mists of history blur my mind. But if I remember it right, they had to go through a door, and I didn't want them just to walk through the door, so I had to put somebody in front of him. And so I put nameless NPC in there, and then they try to bluff him instead of, like, attack him or sneak by him or wait for him to go. And so it's like, okay, you want to bluff him? Well, that means they're rolling X number, which means they have to beat Y number. I don't have Y number because I just pulled this guy out of my ass. Mm-hmm. Roll the dice. Do-do-do. Four. And
the great thing was it grew from there. Yeah. So initially, this was a character where if you would have done a mediocre roll, mm-hmm. we would have never seen this NPC again.
Right.
As it was, we all fell in love with him. We wanted good things to happen. We met mm-hmm. his mother.
Yeah.
And throughout the course of the game, he became a key yeah. character yeah, in the game.
I've had this work in several directions. I mean, I've had NPCs that were supposed to be good, but they can't roll to save their lives. Mm-hmm. I've had NPCs that were supposed to be unimpressive, but they just couldn't do anything but a critical success. But then I've also had times where, regardless of which way it goes, it doesn't per se run contrary to what I wanted. It changes what I wanted.
Yeah.
It gives the character an added
dimension,
yeah, that I didn't already have in there. It gives them, I mean, Limnel,
yeah.
we remember him because of the fact that he was the immovable rock.
Right.
And he was partially the immovable rock because he was too stupid to be anything but the immovable rock.
Yeah. But what was neat about it is, again, I didn't have anything. And so these guys started asking questions. Like, yeah, okay, you know, you bluff him. You get past him. It's not hard. Actually, didn't Wayne roll to get past him and failed his bluff against yeah. the guy who had a 2 intelligence? Because Wayne rolls like,
that I was ended up getting knocked unconscious by yeah, him in that
and
scene.
So that was the thing is like,
yeah, Wayne did get knocked.
So he was at this point, he has like an almost imperceptible intelligence. But Wayne, who is this bard, right?
Yeah.
Bard, intelligent guy, bard, fanciful, con artist, great charisma. Roll it, Wayne. And boom, 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 boom. 1. Well, now all sorts of questions need to be asked. Like, how did you fail? Why did you fail? Is it you messed up? No, the idea that Wayne's character would mess up, who's very intelligent, very charismatic, and an actor, failed at acting against a guy who had a childlike intelligence. No, that's not what happened. So what did happen? All this is, you know, lightning going through everybody's mind. And we just came out. It's just like, this guy's the immovable rock. His boss told him to guard the door. He will not move. Period. End of story. Written in stone. He will die there if no one comes and relieves him. It's like, well, what kind of person is that? Where does this kind of person come from? Wayne's like, okay, well, fine. I'll just go the hard way. Well, come on, let's bring it. Well, of course, I'm suddenly like getting ideas about this character. It's like, okay, well, if he's weak in the mind.
Yeah, about 2 rounds later, Gnarl was carrying Sir William down the hallway.
I remember just so many 1s and 2 rolls because mm-hmm. I came up with all of these ideas. It's like, I'll mage hand his helmet off. Well, that was the wrong idea because he was told he's always supposed to wear his helmet.
Yeah.
So his helmet's gone, and so he's going to beat me until I tell him where it's at.
That's right.
And Wayne couldn't take much beating from this
guy. This what he lacked for in intelligence, I decided to make it up for in muscles. And yeah, he was just a big dumb farm boy.
Yeah, I've had a
to
few
quote Family Guy, he had a pet rabbit. Now he doesn't have a pet rabbit.
I've had a few cases. Somebody will do something that would affect a crowd. Like, let's say they're going to mind blast a crowd or they're going to confuse a crowd. And I'll grab a handful of dice and I'll roll for the whole crowd.
Yeah.
And you'll see, you know, I have 3s and 4. I have a bunch of low rolls and 1 natural 20. Suddenly, what was a normal crowd now has somebody special in it.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there and in my mind, it's like, well, how can I possibly explain how one person out of a crowd of 7 is miraculously fine for this? And I've developed 2 or 3 NPCs because of that, that just the dice threw me a nat 20. And it's like, there is something special about this person.
Well, and that's the great thing about dice is over a long curve, they're predictable. If you roll dice 10,000 times, you get a pretty predictable spread.
Right.
But in a single roll, they're not predictable. And they force you to get creative about things that you might have otherwise simply ignored. And they, as we talked earlier, add dimension to things you might have ignored. But my advice to a GM is if you absolutely want something to be a certain way, I would first start by asking yourself, why is that?
Yeah.
As a GM, it's okay to have some sacred cows, but if you've got a lot of them, especially if they are obstructing the players or changing what the players are going to do, mm-hmm. that gets kind of frustrating. You might want to rethink that. But if you have something that has to be a certain way, for God's sake, don't roll it.
Right.
Just narrate it.
Bingo. Because if you roll it, you may not get what you want. Let me give an example of where this went positively. In our Battletech campaign we played a while back where Wayne got kicked by the Thunderbolt.
Not in his mech.
You guys, no, he wasn't his mech.
His mech was down.
Thunderbolt kicked the head.
That's right.
He was at ground level and Thunderbolt just put his foot in the head. But
what jerk.
You guys had some infantry that you had hired. And really all they were meant to be was just, it answers the question of who's guarding the dropship. Or if we secure an enemy base, who goes in and actually does the room by room sweep. And compared to mechs, infantry are cheap. So you guys hired some infantry. And those guys could not roll, and to put this in a context to your Battletech, it's rolled on 2 6-sided dice, higher is better. All right. And these guys could not roll anything but boxcars.
Right.
Pretty soon they went from being the infantry we got off the street just to fill a role to this is SEAL Team 6.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are the top because everything they did was not just a success, it was a critical success.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave them character. And that spilled over when you guys had RP scenes. Well, now suddenly it's like, okay, they've become interesting enough. They want to RP with them.
Right.
And so I had to start naming at least some of the higher ranking guys in there and giving them personalities and giving them traits and how, because suddenly they were interesting.
You never name your infantry. It's like naming your cow. You never name your infantry because you're going to lose them. Now,
in the exact same game, if you remember, we had the enemy would bring in the Locust. We had 4 mechs shooting at this Locust, and not one of us could hit the thing. So every time after that, every following battle, when a Locust would come in, it was the same Locust.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever heard this was an elite pilot. Have you guys ever heard the single electron theory?
No.
The single electron theory goes something like this. Apparently, electrons are all so perfectly identical that they're really indistinguishable from one another. And so there is a theory that there may, in fact, and this goes way over my head in terms of physics, and I don't know how credible this is, but there's this theory that there may, in fact, only be one electron, and that somehow through quantum whatevers it appears to be in many places. And I don't know. I'm not a quantum physicist. You can look it up if you're really curious, or maybe I'll link an article to it in the show notes. There was a single Locust in that game in the same way there's a single electron. Because even though you guys fought many different forces in many different places at many different points in time, I kept introducing that Locust until it was destroyed, which, by the way, it never was. And so almost every battle you fought, I pulled out that same mech sheet and had that Locust come on the field again.
I called an airstrike on the Locust and it survived.
The driver of that mech had better be, like, promoted several times over.
Well, that's a scary thing. It didn't have a driver.
What? Well, and the first time I saw something like this happen wasn't even in a role-playing game. It was back when we were playing the board game. Was it HeroQuest?
Sure.
Yeah.
So we have all of these really
Knuckles,
old figures.
Or was it Nichols?
Nichols.
Or Nichols.
We have all of these really old figures, so some of them are broken, and one of the goblins has... The blade of the sword is busted off. So it looks like he's holding a
roll of quarters.
Yeah. So we nicknamed him Nichols. And it seemed like every time he came out, he was constantly rolling well and he was doing damage that nothing else could. Well, my wizard that has a staff and does nothing, no real attacks with this thing. The one thing I could do is I could roll and I could hit Nichols every time. My wizard that couldn't do anything, you know, in combat outside of spells became the Nicholbane.
There is an example where it didn't turn out very well in one of my games that I ran. And the group wanted to take on a big bad guy, just like out of storyline, nothing affecting the story. They raffle stomped him in a round and they were about four levels away from where I thought they should be before taking this guy on. So for the rest of the campaign, he became like C-Man, which is like a derisive term for this guy. The dice hated him.
I was thinking about the BattleTech game, because we're sharing a lot of stories, but I actually kind of can dig some advice out of this in some way. So we talked about the Thunderbolt that kicked Wayne's head and killed his character, yeah. Right?
And that was a random roll.
Right. So what happened there and how you can use this sort of thing in your game as a game master is we're playing the map combat. We're doing map dice. There wasn't a whole lot of role play in it because, again, it was just like I'm rolling to, okay, I want to fire my LRM-20s and I want to fire my machine guns and I'm rolling each time I do this sort of level of combat. And Wayne's mech got downed and this Thunderbolt came up and attacked Wayne's mech and kicked it. It was no character behind it. There was no objective. It was like, oh, look, he's prone. I get a +2 to kick him. I'm going to kick him and I'm going to do damage and that is going to be great. Sort of that was your algorithm. That was your what we were doing at that point. Then he rolled a hit. He hit. He rolled the location, the head, the amount of damage done. Annihilated the head, and I think some of the center torso, too. And the poor little man made of jelly that was somewhere in there got splattered.
Unless there be any room to wonder, he also did roll the critical hit and rolled the cockpit.
Yeah, and so, I mean, Wayne's character died. So it's like, okay, that puts the brakes on everything. Well, now, this happened, right? And we said this is going to be a game where people die, and it's going to be cool and all that sort of stuff. So that happened. Everything stops. Now, as a game master, you have to ask, why did this happen? What was this guy trying to do? Because I'm just rolling to hit.
Right.
Now this guy has committed a war crime. So
not a war crime, but certainly. Well, yeah, for a little bit of background there in BattleTech, especially in the older eras of play, because of the fact that mech warriors were semi-nobility, mm-hmm. the idea of intentionally seeking to kill a pilot,
yeah.
that's a huge cultural no-no. They call it headhunting, and you don't do it. You're trying to destroy the mech, and yes, the pilot could be killed in the process, mm-hmm. but if you have a mech that's lying on the ground,
yeah.
and you walk up to it, once again, you take the dice out of the equation, you imagine this event happening,
yeah.
he put a foot into its head.
Mm-hmm.
There really are.
Where he knows the pilot is.
Right, exactly. It's not like there's 20 different outcomes you can right. expect here. It's possible the pilot's going to survive, but certainly the pilot dying, there's a lot of chance of that.
Yeah.
Was he trying to do that? If he was, if
why
it's.
Why is he trying to do that? What kind of person
yeah,
is this?
Or was it an accident? Was he just caught up?
Or was it situational? I mean, yeah. you're in battle. I mean, it's not like, oh, wait, let me think about what I'm going to do for the next 5 minutes before I hit
right.
you.
This is kind of what we're talking about here of the dice happened and there was no emotion. There's no story behind it. So who cares? The dice happened, but the dice happened in such a way that suddenly you're creating a moment of story, of plot. And in this case, very significant plot as a game master. And this is outside of your notes. You could be a note heavy guy and you can have everything planned out and lined out. Now the dice have made something happen that's outside of that. So suddenly, you got to start thinking and coming up with answers. In listening to all these stories, I keep coming back to something happened, now we ask questions, and the answers to those questions have become the story.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true with what happened with Wayne. Why did this guy do it? Is this guy the type of person to commit this horrible atrocity? What is the fallout of that? And the game master is to be the one to answer these questions.
Yeah. Or was it a terrible accident or just, as Derek said, it was just, he didn't think about it. It was,
right.
I have to stop this mech. And he opted for a kick and didn't think it through. And is he now yeah. living with some kind of a deep-seated guilt about this? Or was it intentional? Yeah. Is he a psychopath?
So, and let's say we win the battle. We can't. And as a game master, like, I would arrange it to where they capture the guy. Because they need to role play with him, whether he's like, oh, my God, I'm so terrible. You know, anything you do to me is justified. I am so sorry I did this. Or it's just like he's in there. He's like, hey, can I go over to the mech to lick the blood off the console?
And, or in denial.
Denial.
He's like, well, it really wasn't me that was doing that. Something else happened.
Yeah. Or it's just like, well, none of you filmed it. It was the chaos of combat. Nobody can really know what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big piece of advice is when you roll something out there, not expected, that is a real opportunity.
Yeah.
You have to ask yourself, why did that just happen? If you roll a 20, was it a case of just somebody just did something amazing right now? Or is there more to it than that?
And it's the extreme ends of the roll that is where things I have found get interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's the simple successes or simple failures nobody cares about, because that's something that we like to call life. It's the extremes of these things.
Yeah, the ones in the 20s on a D20. And
yeah, the exploding dice, that sort of thing. The liminals, when liminal happens and people start asking questions. Who is this guy? I mean, it really did get to the point to where the players, this was a total asshole NPC. Yeah. The players cared because they kept asking questions and I kept asking questions. And thank God I'm an improv GM. I answered each one like pop, 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 pop.
When he didn't show up for work, we went and met his mother.
Yes.
Well, that was kind of a closing thought here, but that was something that then came up afterwards. Gaming sessions later, when we took over that castle and we were doing an inventory of its assets, one of the people we specifically asked about is, where is Liminal? And that's something that was only there as a result of the factor that the dice brought to the game. And so, you know, Wayne, you went all the way back to your original point. It is interesting how dice can define our understanding of what's occurring in the game apart from what's being actually narrated. And I think that's a great thing. I agree with you, Chad. I think it's a wonderful thing.
And you really need to roll with it. Even if you're a note-heavy GM who doesn't like to color outside the lines very much, because amazing things can happen on either die rolls that go 1 or 20 or mistakes that you make as a GM. When I accidentally created an NPC love interest for a player character, it turned into a love triangle, which in the end, the player was on the ground literally crying when that whole thing resolved. And that would not have happened if I had not made that mistake. So when these things happen, when you roll a one and you completely flub something, and that defines an interesting aspect for a character, definitely just roll with it. See where it goes.
If you're lucky, you'll end up with people in tears.
Exactly.
All right. So thank you guys for tuning in. One last time, be sure to check the show notes for the links to Fear the Fruit and Fear the Charity. And also stick around after the music, because there will be just a couple minutes of Chad and I BSing on some things.
Yeah.
So thank you for tuning in. Have a great week and great games. Derek, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for the guilt.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
I know. That's why you're evil.
And for the rest of you guys, we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Let's talk about Fear the Con. You guys know, Fear the Con 8, next year we are going to take a year off from doing Fear the Con.
Yeah.
And the reason that we are doing that is because of the fact that Fear the Con is a weird bird. And the reason I say that, I was actually just having a discussion with Eric, who's the host of Metagamers Anonymous. And I actually just did an interview with their show. Great guy. Love talking to him. I want to have him on our show at some point because he was really fun to work with. I'll put a link to that in the show notes if you want to hear it. But I talked to him about a bunch of random stuff, including an L5R LARP, which was a new thing to me. I talked to him, and I don't remember if this was on the episode or prior to it, but one of the peculiarities of Fear of the Con as a convention is most conventions, if they have a quote-unquote human draw, if they have people that you might be going there to see, usually it's not the convention staff. You know, we're going to have this author, this artist, this actor come in, and that's our guest of honor, a keynote person. They're doing autographs. It's not the person running the convention. But one of the things that's kind of put a weird stress on us with Fear the Con is that we're running the convention up until this year. We were always funding the convention out of pocket.
Yeah.
And then when the convention hit, you know, we've got people who are fans of the show or whatever, want to interact with us. And so we're trying to then be on during the convention. And I don't want to sit here and bitch and whine because nobody's making us do this. We do it because we have chosen to do it and we enjoy to do it. And I'm not asking for any sympathy or trying to give a sob story here. But the point is, it is difficult. It is very taxing in terms of...
It takes a lot of resources to put on a con. It takes a lot of money resources, time resources, and emotional investment Hell, it even takes like physical resources. Dan has an entire con kit of several boxes that he lugs. Actually, him and Pat both do.
Yeah, and so what we need to do is we want to take a year off, one, to let ourselves recuperate.
Yeah.
And secondly, to let us have some time to rethink the convention mm-hmm. and think about, are there ways that we can improve how it's handled? Are there ways we can grow its attendance? Right. Are there things that we can do to keep the con where we want it, but also try and work out some of its issues? And if nothing else, just give ourselves some time just to sort of recharge our own batteries. And if there was a punchline that I want to keep coming back to in all of this, it's really that we're kind of in a process of budgeting ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just, once again, we just need some time to ease that burn, to let mm-hmm. ourselves recuperate some of that energy, and then, you know, hopefully come back at it with both barrels further down the line.
Well, and as we said, Dan and I have projects that we're not quite ready to throw out into prime time yet that we want to put our attentions to. And there's also projects that are out there too. Chris has his Table Tales series. Dan, you and a whole lot of other people have Sojourn cooking. I know that Wayne is trying to launch some stuff. So there's a lot of projects that are going on right now that are sort of cooking and bubbling.
I saw this link. I think somebody posted on our Facebook page for this company called Rare Elements Foundry, I think is the name of it. Now, check the show notes, because if I just butchered the name, I will link it correctly
Isn't
in the show
on
notes.
The bag?
I don't know that it is. But, okay, so what they make, we've talked about in previous episodes.
They make jingly things.
They do. We've talked about how we like props in role-playing yes. games. You know, those little kind of tchotchkes and handouts and whatever. And by handouts, I don't mean paperwork. I mean, like, little fun things.
Mm-hmm.
And what they make is they make these custom-minted fantasy coins. And they're made out of metal. These are not plastic. And they are really highly detailed, and they're pretty freaking cool. But the reason I wanted to mention them is not just because they're cool, but I felt they were worth plugging because I did business with these guys, and they took good care of me. Because here's what happened. They have a bunch...
And not because you're Dan of Fear the Boot. You're just some Joe Blow asshole off the internet.
I certainly did not introduce myself as anyone of even minor significance, even of...
Even though we are of major stature.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good Lord. I mean... We don't show up at the Oscars because it wouldn't be fair to anyone else.
That's right. You're the king who put on the commoner's clothes and
Precisely,
went to the market.
Yes.
Yes.
But anyway, so I wanted to order two bags. They have these Knoll coins that have Knolls on them, which, you know, because in case Gnarl comes by to take my lunch money, I needed mm-hmm. something to give him.
Yes.
And by mistake, they sent me instead these two bags of Lich coins, mm-hmm. which are pretty freaking cool
right.
looking.
But it's no Knoll.
And they're like copper, whereas the Knoll coins are gold, and these are
like actual gold or just gold?
No, it's, well, I'm sure it's gold.
I hope.
I can't imagine it's actual gold. If it is, it's probably nothing more than gold, you know, electroplated right. or whatever. But also the Lich ones are five denominations or 20 denomination. Oh, they've got, see, have
yeah, they have the
yeah, it's got the
sides. I'm sure that there's some, what does a coin collector call it? A numinist? There's probably some numinist term for how the sides are not rounded.
Pneumothorax.
Yes.
Just a collapsed lung. I have no idea what a coin collector is.
The numinist.
It's okay.
I'm probably pronouncing it wrong.
I'll take your word for that. I'll link that in the show notes too, I guess.
I'm sure some British person is going to get on there. No, it's numinist or something.
But anyway, so here's how they took care of me. So, okay, so I ordered those Knoll coins, right? Mm-hmm. And they sent me instead, by accident, two bags of these Lich coins. They're pretty cool. So what I did was I took a picture of the coins sitting on top of my printed order.
Right.
And I emailed it to him and said, hey, you know, here's my order. Here's the coins.
Hey, mother effer, give me my money.
And I said, you know, I
paid for my money. So I want my money.
Sounds like a repeat of the Great Depression. But I said, you know, I don't want per se a refund or to return these because I like these, but I would just also like to have the Knoll coins. So I'm going to replace an order. Could you guys just be sure, you know, double check and I get the right ones. And the guy wrote me back and he was like, super cool. And he's like, you know, hey, I'm really sorry. It was a mistake on our part. Mm-hmm. I tell you what we'll do is go ahead and order one thing of the Knoll coins
mm-hmm.
and just put this little promo thing in there. And instead of one, we will send you two for the price of one right. to make up for your troubles. And I thought that was, I mean, look, mistakes happen.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go off on anybody for making a mistake. It's how they handle the mistake. Yeah. And so it was pretty cool. I thought that the way they took care of me and got me some.
And the coins themselves are really awesome.
Yeah, and they're a great product. So if you want that kind of thing, be sure to check that out. And beyond that, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2015. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.